ESPN College Football Podcast.
Welcome to the ESPN College Football Podcast. It is Wednesday, September 22nd. Kevin DeGondi with you. Booger McFarland will join us in a moment with a breakdown of teams that have identities so far to start the season and why they are undefeated. Four specific ones. And then four teams surprising us that are considered elite teams in the top 10 that are still struggling to find their identity behind their quarterback play and any type of consistency. We will break down a lot of stuff, plus some of the key games on ABC, a fantastic matchup at Soldier Field featuring Notre Dame and Wisconsin, as well as the big showdown between A&M and Arkansas. Before we get to Booger, though, two things I want to mention. First, listen to Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max on ESPN Radio Monday through Friday from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern Time. KJM brings you the insights from former number one pick in the NFL draft, Keyshawn Johnson, along with number two pick in the NBA draft, Jay Williams, and the host, Max Kellerman, on the latest news from the NFL and college football. Tune in to hear them debate what's happening and grill the best-known guests in sports. That's Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max on ESPN Radio and ESPN News, or listen to the show wherever you get your podcast. Also, the Peabody and Emmy Award-winning 30 for 30 film series presents Once Upon a Time in Queens, a four-part documentary event about the city, the swagger, and the wild ride of the 1986 Mets. All four parts of Once Upon a Time in Queens are available to stream now on ESPN Plus and the ESPN app. I absolutely love that documentary. It takes me back to a crazy time in baseball and one of the most entertaining teams, filled with a ton of talent and no doubt a lot of censor and bleeps during those four parts of the documentary. Check it out, ESPN Plus, as well as the ESPN app, Once Upon a Time in Queens. Right now, here's me and Booger. So I've done a lot of Zooms during my day in the last 18 months in the middle of a pandemic. I've never done it with a man wearing a towel. Booger McFarland joining us. I mean, people at home, people are listening in the car, whatever they're doing on their headphones. Like, explain yourself. Why are you joining us here on the podcast in a towel?
Well, first of all, people listening in the car will not see this. So let's be clear. If they do, that's a problem. Keep your eyes on the road. Secondly, my schedule is set up as such. On Wednesday morning, I have a hit with Tony Kornheiser at 8:15, and we do this podcast at 10 o'clock. So in between 8:15 and 10, I try to take care of my body. I do something for myself and my physical physique, and it's called working out. You should try it, Kevin. And so I did that today, and I kind of ran short on time. And so by the time I got a shower, I just couldn't stop sweating, which is normal for people that work out, Kev. You still wouldn't know anything about that. So I'm still sweating. Rather than put on a shirt and try to look presentable, I just kept my towel on because I'm going to sweat. People understand that, or at least the people that work out understand that, Kev. You do not. So that's the reason why I'm sitting on this podcast in a towel right now. The towel is taking care of the sweat, which is dripping from my workout. Again, Kev, you know nothing about that.
Taylor, do you notice, like, the first off, the humble brag, you know, I've got to do stuff with Tony Kornheiser first, and then the multiple shots of, yeah, I'm an athlete. Yeah, I get on my bike and ride a Peloton, so that makes me an athlete, and you're not, Kevin. But we can be athletes, but we don't have to, like, just brag about it the entire time and just say, yeah, I'm going to just go up and show up in a towel. How about just put on a shirt after a shower? Just, that's what normal people do. You made a comment about being presentable. I've never seen anybody present themselves in a towel in a Zoom, but here we are.
Okay, this is presentable. I mean, some
to
people.
Whom? When you're getting a massage.
Well, I mean, technically this is not presentable for the massage, because at a massage, they often say dress to your level of your comfort, which I just wear nothing. So there's a difference between the massage and then and the podcast now.
Well, lucky me. Okay. Lucky me. I get to see Booger McFarland wearing a towel around him. It kind of looks like a robe, just so everybody knows. Okay.
Yes,
like,
yes, yeah. Yes. The white double tree robe that is so comfortable.
Here's the one thing that Booger knows. Booger has an identity that he could recognize. He has found his identity, and that is through Peloton post-career. And I want to start this podcast Specifically, we talked about this at length on Saturday. We've seen enough football now in the first few weeks of the season where there are the haves and the have-nots, and there are teams who have identities like Arkansas, Michigan State, Michigan, Oregon. They have yet to lose. On the other side, there's a handful of questions on what's Clemson's identity. What's Ohio State's identity? I want you to specifically talk about Ohio State's identity because you know what their identity should be, but we're not seeing that, or we're not seeing that consistently, or we saw it on the back end of that game where they're trying to save what's left of the conversation of the season moving forward. What's Notre Dame's identity? And you know what? What's Oklahoma's identity? Of the four teams I mentioned that know their identity, of the four teams that still we're trying to understand their identity, what stands out?
Well, Kev, I think let's look at the haves first. Let's look at the teams that have an identity. Michigan. I mean, Jim Harbaugh has tried for years, hey, are we going to get a quarterback? It was Shea Patterson. Then it was our guy Milton. It was so many different quarterbacks that they tried. And finally said, you know what? We have Cade McNamara, but let's do what we can do best. Let's be physical. Until we can bring our quarterback along, until we get to a point where our offense can expand, let's just line up and beat the hell out of people. They've rushed for 300 yards in every game. They've been physical. They've been downhill. They lose their best receiver. It doesn't matter. They just continue to run the football. Michigan State, you look at what they've done with Kenneth Walker. They didn't have a rushing touchdown last year, Kev. Now, all of a sudden, they come out, and Walker, the transfer from Wake Forest, has been dominant running the football. And an interesting quote from Mel Tucker that I thought spoke volumes and should have reverberated throughout college football. He said, you know what? We went down to Miami, and we wanted to drag them in the deep end and see if they could deal with our mental resolve and our toughness. Think about that, Kev. Michigan State, East Lansing, it's cold as hell up there at some point of the year. They don't know what humidity is. They go down to South Florida, where the U is supposed to have been back 15 times by now, and they take Miami into the deep end. Says a lot about Miami, Jonathan Vilma, and his program. Hopefully Michael Irvin and all the great Canes will figure out what's going on. But it just speaks volumes to the mentality that Mel Tucker has brought to Michigan State. And to me, that says a lot. As far as Arkansas, Kev, you're starting to see a trend here, right? Teams that run the football have an identity. Football is physical. Remember when football almost turned into basketball on grass and everybody said, man, you got to spread everybody out. You got to put all around. It's got to be five wide, the air raid. It's amazing. Only a few years later, we're coming back to the teams that run the football, that can be physical, that can control the clock and play defense. Their teams are winning. Just look at what Arkansas did to Texas. Now let's flip over to the have-nots. The have-nots are the one that I think concerned America the most because they're the biggest names. Mm-hmm. Ohio State, what are we going to do with C.J. Stroud? Can we make him the next Justin Fields? Can we make him the next great quarterback, the next Haskins? They're trying too hard. They have a five-star running back in Travion Henderson that, by all accounts, Kev, will be the best running back in America next year. He's not that now because I believe that's Isaiah Spiller at Texas A&M. But by all accounts, Henderson will be the best running back in America. And we've been waiting. We've been waiting for them to say, hey, it's your turn. They finally gave him the football, almost 200 yards rushing. What did that do? That took the pressure off of Stroud, who has struggled a lot so far this year. His balls have been high. His mechanics are not good. And to me, Ohio State would be better served if they would turn the game over to all these five-star offensive linemen and allow that quarterback to take his time and mature. And then I think the biggest kind of head-scratcher of all is DJ Uiagalelei. For him, Kev, and I know I got close to that time, hopefully with his name.
You got close.
Yeah, I didn't quite get it. But Kev, remember when Mel Kiper said 2 years ago after, or it was last year after one start, he'll be the first pick in 2023. We're seeing anything but that right now. Clemson has no identity. He looks to be a guy who has not only regressed, he doesn't look to be the same guy. Now, some of that's his fault, because I think as young men, we start to believe the hype a little bit. But you got to put some fault on Dabo and Tony Elliott, the offensive coordinator. They got a lot to do. And Clemson, as talented as they are, which I think they have the best defensive line in America, they will not win at a high level if they can't get the quarterback figured out. More importantly, if they can't get a running game figured out. So,
but
haves,
here's the thing.
haves and have-nots, you know?
They don't have playmakers. Like, right. they don't have the slot receiver. They don't have the running back. And yeah, DJ. What's that?
What about Ross? Ross,
I know. What happened to Ross? Like, I think there was a lot of expectations coming in, especially after what happened last season, how he had to sit out and his health. Like, DJ, it feels like, is pressing too much, right? When you watch him, like last year in the two games, you saw the confidence of a freshman, like, yeah, I'm a five-star guy. This year, it's the weight of the world on his shoulders. I've got to make a play instead of just naturally flowing. And also, I mean, we talked briefly about this last week. They don't have Deshaun Watson. They don't have Trevor Lawrence, two mobile quarterbacks that cover a little bit of the, you've got to scramble.
Right.
I mean, DJ is not a statue, but he's not one of those guys that's going to think run on the first or second or third option. He's going to do everything he can to put the ball in the air. Now, I want to get to one team, too, that you and I talk a little bit in depth with. We're going to see them on ABC against West Virginia at 3:30 Eastern Saturday is Oklahoma. Well, what do we make of Oklahoma and trying to understand Spencer Rattler and where this offense is? And like, can you feel comfortable? Like if I were going to give you the choices of these four teams of Clemson, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Oklahoma, and I said, these are your teams, which one's going to go the furthest? Are you feeling more comfortable with Oklahoma, or are you going Clemson, Ohio State, or even Notre Dame?
I feel less confident in Oklahoma than I do the other three.
Wow.
I do. Because Kev, Oklahoma still battles that identity of our defense is not good, so our offense has to score a ton of points. And it's a mentality. And when the offense struggles, then the defense walks on the field with their shoulder slump. You know how your kid is when you tell them they can't have something, their shoulder slump, they don't have confidence, and it's like they're pouting. Well, Oklahoma still does that. And it all starts with Spencer Rattler. Spencer Rattler, I think, has read some of his press clippings. He is a dual threat quarterback that needs to be on the edge and feeling like he's kind of a playmaker. When Spencer Rattler is in the pocket trying to be Troy Aikman or trying to be a statue back there, that's not when he's at his best. He's got to be elusive. Get back on his back foot. If it's not there, then, hey, step up in the pocket and start to go through your progression. I don't find it a coincidence, Kev. He plays his best ball when he's on the move. Now, that doesn't bode well when you start talking about the professional ranks and all of that. But, hey, big guy, we're not in pro football yet. Stop worrying about your draft status. Stop worrying about your draft stock. And if you're Lincoln Riley, start to call the plays that are going to put him in position to move the football. Because more than any other team, because if you think about Alabama and Georgia, they're not this way. But think about Oklahoma. When their defense doesn't see 14, 21 points on the board, and they know it's going to be a dogfight, man, like that defense, even though it's gotten better under defensive coordinator Alex Grinch, it's still not what I would call something you can rely on. Whereas we see teams that have really good defenses like Alabama and Georgia, they're used to playing, you know, 7-point games and 3-point games and low scoring games. Oklahoma doesn't want to play a low scoring game. They want to be in the 40s and 50s, and then that defense can free will it. And Lincoln can say, hey, Alex, just get me the ball back. I'll score some more points.
How much is this about? I mean, when you look at Rattler's numbers, 75% completion percentage, 7 touchdowns, 2 picks. How much of this is this about the expectations of a top high school recruit? Mm-hmm. You see the previous quarterbacks in Lincoln Riley's system, Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Jalen Hurts, that it's just like, oh, it's just a natural progression.
Yeah.
Fit anybody in there. Like, it just feels like something is missing and not clicking. And he's had enough games, because when you talk about Clemson, Uiagalelei, okay, what? He's had 5 starts under his belt. You look, talk about CJ Stroud, 3 starts under his belt. Jack Cohn, new team, different offense. So it just feels like something is not vibing right when you have still so many weapons at Oklahoma in their offense. And that's what I just can't wrap my head around. Like, what's missing about Spencer Rattler in this offense right now?
Well, I think, like, I get it. You have some of the great weapons. Marvin Mims, a really good wide receiver from a running back standpoint. Kennedy Brooks, like, they have talent. I get all of that. But I just think, where's the trust factor in the reliability from Rattler to those guys? More importantly, think about how you play the game, Kev. Oftentimes, a play caller in Lincoln Riley has to be patient. And what I mean by that is, you can't come out calling plays to score 60. You come out calling plays saying, okay, we're going to methodically move the football, and we're going to put our players in the best position to make plays. And the big plays just naturally happen. If you come out looking for big plays, that's usually when they don't happen. Think about early on, Spencer Rattler against Tulane. Second pass of the game, he throws a pick because he's looking for a big play. You can't look for that. Like, you go through your progressions, and I think Oklahoma falls into that category, and maybe this is just the Big 12 where you say, okay, we are used to scoring 40 or 50. Now, I do think he's got to get other guys to step up. We know about Brooks and Mims. Who else is going to step up? They've always had that great receiver. They've always had a guy, CeeDee Lamb, a guy that can go in. And if you just put him one-on-one and throw it up, he can make a play. They need more playmaking ability. And on top of that, I just think the bottom line, the quarterback's got to play better. Like, we can try to make excuses. Sometimes the excuse is, hey, you're just not doing your job. It's like I tell you when you talk about you did arm day. I'm like, hey, Kev, there's no such thing as arm day when it comes to working out. Give me a specific muscle, work the hell out of the muscle, and move on. Nobody does arm day. So if you're Spencer Rattler, just play better. Stop doing arm day. Go in and do a full-fledged workout.
You make adjustments. Yesterday, you work on back and buys, and that's what I did, right? Earlier in the week, it was chest and tries. Like, you know, so you make adjustments, Boog.
Correct.
That's what you do.
Who does
and then
back,
you
though?
Shower and put a shirt on, and then you do a podcast, right? You don't just show up and say, yeah, I'm out of the shower. I just worked out, everybody. Let me just tell everybody. All right, so that's our nightcap on ABC. That is the 7:30 game, West Virginia, Oklahoma. I've talked about this several times. I love what Neil Brown's done. Jared Daigie, Letty Brown. They can score. Oklahoma's
feed the 10- Letty Brown. Feed yeah, Letty Brown.
Exactly. And Oklahoma has a tendency to play to the level of their talent and not elevate. And they're favored by 16.5 points. This feels like a breakout offensive game. It's just because West Virginia can score points as well, right? This feels like a 45-30 type of game. Is that the vibe?
Oh, well, to me, there's no question. And it's all going to be dictated by how aggressive that West Virginia wants to be. Okay, if you're going to come out throwing the football, I honestly think that if you're West Virginia, I featured Letty Brown, but I featured to him in the screen game. Throw him the football. Get him outside because you know Oklahoma's going to come in and say, okay, let's stop him. Open this game up. Oklahoma is not a very good tackling football team. They take a lot of chances. You're going to have one-on-one coverage on the outside. And if you're Daigie, you got to be able to make sure that you value each possession. You're probably going to get 12 to 14 possessions. No turnovers. How do you secure an upset? No turnovers. You're going to need a special teams or a defensive score. And then you got to get big plays and capitalize when you get them. And so I'm not calling it upset, but as our good friend Lee Corso say, this is going to be closer than the experts think.
Okay, cannot wait. Game day, you mentioned Lee Corso, Jack Cohn, Notre Dame, taking on Wisconsin at Soldier Field.
Yeah.
That was one of the teams I mentioned that identity-wise. What do you make of Notre Dame right now? Because, listen, like, they can deserve some credit for holding off Florida State. You deserve some credit for holding off Florida State.
Yes.
In that environment.
Credit? Yes. Why are we giving them credit for holding off a team that's winless?
No. But it's week one was completely different from where this team is right now, right?
Okay.
Where you're working the emotions of the crowd.
Bobby Bowden, the first game at home. Yeah.
Mackenzie Milton, come on out. Yes. Like, right. Yes. Right. The kids held off that crowd and Doak was buzzing. That was the peak of Doak in 2021.
Yeah, right.
they survived the following week against Toledo. And Purdue was like, they let Purdue hang around. It's a one score game with 6 minutes to go. And then, you know, that offensive line finally winning the battle. How do you feel about a game like this with Notre Dame against Wisconsin? Because it's going to be ugly. No one thinks it's a sexy matchup.
Right.
It is just punch you in the face. Running backs take over.
Yep.
Jack Cohn, former Wisconsin quarterback. Mm-hmm. What's the first thing that you think this game will come down to?
Well, I'm going to flip it over to the defensive side of the football. Notre Dame has a new defensive coordinator, Marcus Freeman from Cincinnati. We'll talk about that in depth more when they have that huge matchup coming up here
next week.
Next week. His defense against the Wisconsin running game. Wisconsin, for whatever reason, against Penn State, they went away from Chez Mulushi. I mean, he was running the football up and down the field, and all of a sudden they said, hey, Graham Mertz, remember who you are. We're going to let you throw the football. And he's dropping snaps, throwing picks in the end zone. So I honestly think Wisconsin is going to say, okay, we lost one game trying to make Graham Mertz the same guy we saw against Illinois last year when the stadium was empty. Let's go back to who we are. Okay, let's run the football. So if you're Notre Dame and you're Marcus Freeman, what did Florida State have success on against Notre Dame? Running the football up and down the field. So if I'm Wisconsin, I'm saying we run the ball better than Florida State. Our offensive line is more physical than that team. So Notre Dame's got to stop the run, man, defensively. And Marcus Freeman, I get it, new scheme, hasn't quite lived up to what I think the expectations were. So what does Notre Dame come out and do defensively? I think that's going to go a long way toward this game. And then I honestly think Wisconsin, more than any other team, even though Graham Mertz is a better passer than maybe they've had before, Kev, think about the emotion of this game. Jack Cohn, former Wisconsin quarterback, going against his old team. Listen, remember the first time that you went back home or maybe you were at the class reunion and you saw the girl that you used to date and, yeah, you're married now. Mm-hmm. You moved on. Yep. Like it's different feelings.
Different feelings, yep.
It's different feelings. So how well does Jack Cohn handle those feelings? If I'm Brian Kelly, I'm having a conversation with him this week. Hey, man, listen, this is just a game. I know it's your former team, and I know you want to beat them worse than anybody else, but let's settle down, okay? And for Notre Dame, their offensive line, Kev, hasn't been good this year, okay? They've had to figure out a way to manufacture offense where normally it was run the football, let's hand it to Williams and Tyree, and throw it to Michael Mayer and get this thing going. They haven't been able to do that. It's because their offensive line hasn't been good. So this game, to me, which team can be more physical, which defense can make a play, okay? The heat, to me, is on the Notre Dame defense and Marcus Freeman. I think if I'm Graham Mertz, I want to run the football and play action pass and try to hit Notre Dame over the top, very similar to the way that Florida State did.
And to add to your point, too, you show up the class reunion and the girl that you were with in high school is now with the guy that she was with after you. And that's yes. What Jack Cohn is staring. Graham Mertz is on the other side. Graham yes. Mertz is the reason why I'm over here and not the quarterback of Wisconsin. Right. So it doubles that emotion down yep. where you're staring down. I want to not only beat that team, but I got the quarterback on the other side. Right.
I got to show him.
Exactly. And, yes. and that's actually a great point there with Brian Kelly. Soldier Field's going to be great. Really cool environment. I do like home games, but a game like this with Notre Dame and Wisconsin in that setting will be pretty electric. For Notre Dame, we mentioned they got Cincinnati next week. Wisconsin next week has Michigan. And let's just circle back with Michigan because it's our afternoon game on ABC. They're at the Big House again, 3-0 with Rutgers 3-0 coming in. Blake Corum, Hassan Haskins, they just run the football. The team is averaging 7 yards a game on the ground. We know that this is what Harbaugh wants to do.
Yeah.
My question to you is this sustainable big picture? Or is it fair to even look at if this is sustainable? Or is we're at a point where Michigan, where we're just like, take it week by week, just win the game in front of you. Don't worry about where the program is down the road if they were to get down by a touchdown or two.
Well, I don't think it's sustainable because of the team that they've gone against. You go against a Washington team that, I mean, we talked about them. We had them on DEFCON alert as far as struggling with their defensive coordinator, Coach Jimmy Lake. I don't think it's sustainable when you go against better competition because what's going to happen? You're not going to be able to physically move people. Now, God help America if they can, because if they can do this in Big Ten play, then, hey, look out. Mm-hmm. Now, I do think at some point, because stopping the run, let's take a minute and educate the people. Stopping the run is less about talent and more about numbers. So it's really simple. If I have 7 blockers and you have 8 defenders, math tells you somebody's free to make a tackle. Okay, so stopping the run is less about talent and scheme and more about just saying, I'm going to dedicate sheer numbers to stopping the run. Now, the flip side of that is you leave your receivers outside one-on-one. So whether or not they can continue and sustain this would depend on if they can get somebody, if Cornelius Johnson and his group can sustain and beat one-on-one coverage on the outside. Now, if they can do that, then, okay, it's going to make defensive coordinators less confident in bringing that extra guy in the box. So it's all going to be dependent upon how they play. Can these guys on the outside make some plays? But, yeah. I think it was, I forget who it was, one of the great offensive linemen said, there's no better feeling than to move a man against his will. And that's what they're doing right now. They're just lining up, moving guys against their will, and it takes a toll on a defense. So if they can do that, then look out.
I love that Harbaugh. Listen, through the years trying to figure things out, he's just like, forget it. Let's just work to the roster. Let's take advantage of what I have on right. the field and let's just move forward. And that's the vibe in the other big matchup featuring Arkansas and Texas A&M. Sam Pittman looked at the roster and said, I know who we are. I love the vibe. I actually deep down really like KJ Jefferson when you look at who he is and what he can do. How do you view this A&M game with Arkansas? Because again, I will stress this, Arkansas after this game, they've got Georgia, Ole Miss, and Auburn. So Zach Calzada, you mentioned Isaiah Spiller being the best running back in the country. How do you view this A&M Arkansas game where A&M's favored by 5.5 points?
How does A&M want to play the game? Are they going to open it up? Okay, their starting quarterback, Haynes King, is out with the broken leg. Zach Calzada takes over. He took over in the Colorado game, and he struggled a little bit in that game. You know, is Jimbo going to open the game up? Okay. Arkansas, although they can score, they aren't explosive. Okay, there's a difference. And so if you're Texas A&M, how do you take Arkansas out of the physicality? Well, you got to get up on them. You get up 10, 14 points, and then the Sam Pittman, does he panic? Does he panic and say, we got to throw the football with KJ Jefferson? So I just think it depends on how Jimbo says he wants to play this. Am I going to give it to Spiller and turn this over to the offensive line, which is retooled from last year? Or do I try to open this game up going up against a Barry Odom defense that doesn't give up big plays? And so that, to me, will determine – this is almost a tempo game. It's almost like you got the Golden State Warriors of old against the 76ers, who I know you love. Is this going to be a grinded-out physical game, or are we going to turn this into the Warriors where we're trying to score 130? Because Jimbo wants to play explosive offense, but I don't know if he can do that with Calzada, who isn't his normal quarterback, who I think is a better runner maybe than a better passer.
Calzada's got a big arm. I would be stunned if this is a double-digit lead type of game, right? This doesn't feel like – this feels right. Like – and that favors Arkansas. If you keep it within one score as the game continues, that line – and listen, A&M's defensive front is fantastic.
Yes.
But I come back to Arkansas – just the will of that front offensive line, what we've seen so far. Really good measuring stick, which leads me to the next question in the SEC. We know Alabama's number one. We know Georgia's number two.
Right.
After what you saw from Florida, after what you've seen from A&M, after what you've seen from Ole Miss, after what you've seen from Arkansas, who's the third best team in the SEC?
Wow.
Right now.
Right now? I'd probably say Florida. I think when you go toe-to-toe with the bully, and the bully being Alabama, and you have an opportunity, depending on what Emory Jones does on one of that zone read, to put that game into overtime, man, that it's the true saying of a team. I think I learned more about Florida in a loss.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned about Alabama in a win. And so I would say Florida is the third best team. And they didn't even – Richardson didn't play, correct me if I'm wrong. He didn't play in that game.
Nope.
His hamstring is still messed up. Emory Jones grew leaps and bounds. And hopefully they can continue to progress and use that as a leaping board into the future rather than saying, okay, we just gave him our best shot, kind of like Florida State did Notre Dame in week one.
Yeah, shout out to Dan Mullen's play calling. I thought it was fantastic in the second half. Let's not forget – you know, Alabama wins 31-29. Alabama scored 21 points in the first quarter. Correct. And then it's what happened the next three quarters and how basically I really was impressed with what Florida did. And then we talked about it Saturday. You could find a way of actually moving up in the standings after a loss. That was one of those games with the Gators. All right, it's that time now. Where we do it every single week, we go to the DEFCON teams and Booger's DEFCON. And let's start here with UCLA.
UCLA, Kip, I'm going for UCLA. We're going DEFCON 4 for UCLA.
DEFCON 4.
All right, Booger, I want to know, though, that you, like literally a week ago, UCLA is everybody's raving about where that program is and how fantastic it is and what Chip's doing. And now they're on the DEFCON list. Why? Yes.
Because, Kev, I mean, did you see the game against Fresno?
Yeah. Well, shout out to Fresno and Jake Haner. Fresno could score. But, yeah, okay, what do you want to tell me about this game?
Fresno can score, but – if you're UCLA and you're looking to, okay, here's where I look at it. So Fresno took Oregon down to the wire. They didn't beat them, but they took Oregon to the wire. All right. Oregon goes to the horseshoe and basically just pounds Ohio State. If you're UCLA and you think you're one of the upper echelon team and you've arrived, I think Fresno showed just a little bit of chink in the armor in UCLA and Chip's ability to be power football and run it and fast break. And I love a DTR. I love you, buddy. But if they don't continue to develop and evolve him as a passer, when they go up and when they go against some of the better teams, now we thought that UCLA had arrived because they beat LSU, and God knows we don't know what LSU is just yet. But a little reason to pause with the loss against Fresno State. So we're going DEFCON 4 for UCLA.
You know, and we'll learn a little bit more about UCLA with Stanford and Arizona State on the schedule for them, their next two games.
Exactly.
This is one of those, all right, how are you going to handle some adversity here where everybody was patting you on the back and feeling good? What are you going to do now with a Stanford team that it feels like Stanford's such a weird team because – you want to give them the benefit of the doubt. I feel like everybody does at the start of the season. Then they give you a major letdown and then they surprise you. And you're like, no, this is what we thought they were going to be earlier in the season. You know, they've got to figure some things out consistently on the offensive side. All right. Our next DEFCON team comes from the Big Ten. Who is it?
Yes, Kev. We're going with the Indiana Hoosiers and we're going DEFCON 2 for the Hoosiers.
DEFCON 2.
Why?
Kev, talk about a team. Listen, I love Tom Allen, and they were the sexy pick, how hard they play for him. But Michael Penix Jr. is not the same this year. Like, he's not, man. I mean, he doesn't look the same. It's almost as if they aren't sneaking up on anyone. And from a talent standpoint, they got to take the next step. They got good receivers, but the quarterback isn't playing to that level defensively. I just watched the way Iowa beat them and manhandled them, okay? To me, that gave me a lot of pause. And I just wonder where they're going to be able to go as they don't sneak up on anyone. The talent level is not going to change. And so that schedule in the Big Ten is going to get tough. And so I am very concerned about the quarterback, but more importantly, about the overall psyche of this team as they go through the Big Ten schedule.
Panic's coming off the knee injury. They were up 14-0 against Cincinnati. That kick return just was just a gut punch, a 99 yards. Now they got Western Kentucky. And then you mentioned the schedule at Penn State, Michigan State, Ohio State afterwards. That to me, it feels
that's
like.
Let's be honest. That's 0-3 after this week.
But I also believe they're the type of team that could that could end all of the feel good of Michigan State season, right? Where they could surprise you or they could give Ohio State a bunch of trouble. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see in October where this team is at. But we've got them at DEFCON 2. Another DEFCON team. Let's go to the American. Who you got?
I'm going with the University of South Florida, Kev. DEFCON 1, I am nervous for Jeff Scott in South Florida.
DEFCON 1.
All right, DEFCON 1 is serious. Like, we are approaching a nuclear situation. This program is when you talk about the talent in your backyard outside of Tampa, they shouldn't be in this situation regardless.
Kev, they really haven't been in these games that they've gotten blown out. And it's like, okay, I'm here in Tampa. That's where I live at. South Florida is 20 minutes from my house. I know the talent within an hour of the school. And it's like, if you're Jeff Scott, you come from Clemson, you're supposed to be able to take the offense to the next level and use some of that Clemson bravado. I haven't seen it. And I'm concerned. I am truly concerned about where USF goes. They've dibbled and dabbled in the quarterback market. They got the transfer from Alabama, the five-star kid from Alabama a few years ago. He didn't pan out, so they continue to look for quarterbacks. And meanwhile, they continue to get hammered over and over and over. And so I just wonder, and it's all recruiting. So from a recruiting standpoint, they haven't been able to lock up Central Florida. They're losing that battle to UCF. And if they don't change something, UCF is kind of the shiny new toy with Gus Malzahn. And so I just wonder where this program is going to go, where Jeff Scott is going to turn to next, because they look overmatched when they go up against any team that's in the FBS.
And the quarterback you're mentioning is Blake Barnett, who had that journey from Bama to Arizona State. And then you're like, okay, now you got your shot at South Florida. I'm with you, man. You know, living down in the Sarasota area, the talent in that entire region, like you mentioned, that 1 hour radius outside of Tampa, you could feel the a phenomenal team.
Players
who do not go to Florida State, who do not go to Florida or Miami. And let's face it now, we're seeing a lot of players in that state just not staying in the state. And that's
correct.
That's the reason why Miami needs to bring in a bunch of transfers. And it's why Florida State's trying to patch their team up, which is stunning. I would have never thought that we would see such an influx of talent in that state leave. And we're seeing a lot of that. Is that a surprise? Because we started this conversation where Michigan State and Mel Tucker decided to transform his program through transfers and the transfer portal. Manny Diaz did the same thing, but Manny Diaz cannot. I'm stunned. And I know we're taking a turn here. I'm just stunned that the talent in Florida is not staying in Florida, specifically at teams like at programs like Miami, Florida State, and Florida.
Yeah, Kevin, it's surprising, but the evolution of conference networks, the evolution of everybody playing on TV, the evolution of the college football playoff, and the hierarchy at the top, the haves and the have-nots, have made it tougher for Florida, Florida State, Miami to keep these guys here because those three teams haven't been on that national stage in a few years. And what happens is if you're Florida, and right now Florida's probably the best, so you can tell that their recruiting is up a little bit.
Yeah, Mullen's great with recruiting. Yep.
Florida State, Mike Norvell, Manny Diaz, and Miami a little down. And so when you can't get the kids in state, you have to go out of state to get them, which is why I think if you're Florida State and you're Miami, and we discussed this and we don't have to get into detail, but I don't know if Norvell is the answer at Florida State. Now, they don't have an athletic director, so I doubt he's going anywhere this year. So he's probably going to be back next year with no AD. I mean, they're 0-3 right now, Kev. I mean, if Florida State played Temple, I mean, it's a toss-up game, and that's saying a lot. I'm just being honest. I'm just saying that's a toss-up game, and that's not a compliment to Temple either. Okay? I'm just keeping it real.
Trust Miami? Me, I didn't take that as a compliment in any shape or form, man. You know how to kick a man when he's down, no matter what, in a subtle space.
Listen, if LSU gets hammered by Mississippi State and Mike Leach this week, I will never hear the end of it from you and everyone on our text chain.
So no doubt. I mean, you better watch it because Joey will be relentless. Joey Galloway, who we'll have, of course, on the podcast tomorrow. By the way, Joey always takes shots at you. I know you don't listen to the Thursday's podcast. You hear enough of Joey. Joey's always giving you jabs. My favorite one is that he just doesn't like you. And that's always good. That is always good to hear.
It's amazing how he doesn't like me, but he texts me all the time. So I just leave it at
that. Isn't that great? Like that thing. Yeah. Exactly. Joey says he's one thing, but deep down, he's somebody completely different.
Of course.
All right, brother. Appreciate you. Now, could you just put on a damn shirt? Never thought I'd say that on a Zoom in my life, but please put on a shirt.
You know what this reminds me of? You know that commercial where the dude walks out and he's like, hey, I'm ready for the Zoom. And he's got a shirt and his underwear on. And he was like, what are you doing? He's like, I thought we was doing the Zoom thing. And she's like, no.
And then they had the other couple sitting there in the room looking.
Because here's the thing. It's a great commercial because he's not just in his underwear. He's in the tidy whitey. So he didn't even have boxers on.
Yeah.
He's got the old school crotch huggers on. And I'm like, come on, dude. Like, nobody wears those anymore.
Yeah.
Look at the Loom and Hanes don't even make those anymore, I don't think.
Same way I'm like, come on, dude. No one wears a towel to a Zoom. And here we are breaking it down. Booger. Hey, buddy.
Glad I can be with you, buddy.
Be good. We don't need to see social media posts, though, and you in a towel and sweating, all right? Just to make sure we just keep that here offline, all right?
Later, dude.
See you, buddy. All right, big thanks to Booger McFarland. Let's hope Joey's wearing a shirt tomorrow. The ESPN College Football Podcast will be back with Joey Galloway. That is Thursday tomorrow. We'll be making our Week 4 picks. Cannot wait. Cannot wait to hear his counter, and he'll make something up when it comes to our picks and how well I did and how bad he struggled. Plus, Heather Dinich will be with us to empty the notebook and set the table for all the action over the weekend as we bring in our college football reporters and insiders every Thursday here on the podcast. Big thanks to Taylor Schwenk, our fantastic digital audio producer on the other side, making sure we can bring you the podcast each Wednesday and Thursday. I'm Kevin Agati. Have a great day.